Bromsgrove, for example, right up in Little Wembley. Right.
My name is Simon Summers. I'm a blacksmith. I specialise in heritage blacksmithing, and I've come here to share my skills and my craft with the folk that come to the festival. The Iron Age people, or even before that, you know, going back into time, nature was a really important part of their lifestyle because they were actually living out in nature. So some of the finds that archaeologists have found, you know, beautiful treasures of nature in them, like the spiral, you'll see as ferns unravel as they grow in the spring, they're all coiled up and they unravel. Snail shells and so on, and lots of sea creatures, what they were seeing, these beautiful shapes and things from nature all around them, they embraced, and then that you could see it in their craftsmanship. We're using steel here, but sometimes we use iron that I've smelted beforehand, but there's quite a hard process involved with that. So the Iron Age people would have smelted their own iron from like iron ore rock and smelted the iron content out of that in a furnace. We do that, but what you just saw me forging was a piece of mild steel. It was about 6 millimetre round diameter, and then I've had to forge it out into a square taper, then knock the corners off that square taper into an octagonal taper, then knock the corners off the octagonal to make it round. Then you've got like a needle, and then I've rolled up the needle. So not only have you can see the spiral coiling up, but you're actually seeing the thickness of the material. From a really thin needle point coming into a thicker, wider piece of material, so it's more effective. And that's all done with the hammer on the anvil and doing it by eye and by hand, understanding and training your eye and hand to form metal just with a hammer on an anvil. And you can do amazing things with that technique, and that's what they've done for thousands of years, you know.
So how do you actually, and how did they originally heat the iron, as it originally was, up to the temperature where you can start to work it?
Oh, well, what we've done here is we've recreated that whole environment. I've bought clay from Devon, where I'm based in Totnes. So we've brought the clay up here and we've mixed it with sharp sand and straw to build a forge on the floor. And then we've got leather bellows blasting the air into the forge.
Well, you're calling it a forge. I mean, it looks to me like two sort of long mountains of clay that you just put on the floor here and you've got the fire in between them.
That's right. It looks like two embankments of clay, like two walls. So you've got the front and the back wall. The air is coming through the back wall into the area in between.
So one of the walls has got a hole in it, and you've got these two pipes coming from two bellows to go right into the middle of the fire.
That's right, yeah, and the front wall is to keep the charcoal in place, because charcoal's very light. So if you've got air blasting into it, if we didn't have that front wall, the charcoal would just blast out and blow everywhere. So those two walls are retaining an area that can keep the charcoal in one location. And then both ends are open, so you can slide a piece of material, it could be iron or copper or anything you like, into the fire. You could make a sword in that fire, and then you get the spot heat right where the air goes into the charcoal. So you can move your material up and down into the fire to get the heat where you want it. So it's like very controlled, compact, clean way of forging. Yeah, so we call that a forge fire. If we was to smelt iron, we would build another clay structure, but it would be in a furnace. So it would be like a conical chimney sort of shape with a door in the middle and the airflow again going into it at a certain point. And then you would have like an open chimney where you'd put the charcoal charge and the iron ore deposits in, and they all find each other. Once the charcoal burns away, the iron ore finds each other. So it's a similar sort of setup. The four main elements, we've got earth, and we're using clay, or you know, like to build the forge. So that's the earth. We're using the air, which is the bellows, to breathe into the fire. Then of course we've got the fire to heat up the iron to forge it, and then we've got a water source to quench the iron afterwards. So we actually working and embracing with the four elements of nature there. If you think of right early on, we talk about like Neolithic times, and that's like more Stone Age, and then we got the Bronze Age, and then it goes into the Iron Age. But before the Bronze Age, they obviously discovered, when they've been mining and digging and exploring what materials and sources there are around them, to move forward in production of different tools, you know, from a flint axe, for instance, to this new bronze axe. But before they discovered bronze, they discovered copper and then tin.
And these metals were discovered just simply from getting rocks which had that oxide in and smelting it, heating those rocks up in a conventional fire and finding that actually metal would run out. I mean, how does that actually... I mean, is that something you can do at home? Said that you've got a furnace at home, but it has to be heated up pretty hot, does it?
Yeah, basically, no, you couldn't just do this at home. You have to understand a little bit of the metallurgy. And when we think about the old times, they wouldn't have done this in a fiery way. It was quite a dangerous thing to do. The gases that would be released from this smelting, they would basically go into caves, which had no ventilation. They would be going in total darkness and they would be building massive fires to actually draw the material out of the rock. The gases from that, the fumes, would be quite dangerous. So no, it's not something you can do at home. That moved on. They would actually extract the rock and break it down with hammers to get most of the rock out of the way, the stone that's protecting the mineral that they were after. They would build clay furnaces to put as pure as they could iron ore into the furnace. And then what would happen when it get up to temperature, all of the impurities would separate, and we call that a slag. We drain off the furnace to release those waste products in a liquid form. It looks like actually liquid gold pouring out, and that's the waste. And then what you've got left in there is the sticky toffee, which is the stuff that you're after. That's with iron, but with copper it's a little bit different. But when they found copper and tin, they blended them together, and then you've got bronze. That's what bronze is, copper and tin. So then they got this hard metal, because copper is very malleable and ductile. If they made an axe out of it, it would pretty, you know, like it would stay, you know, sharp for a little while, but it would become blunt and bend quite easily. So if you hammer a piece of copper, you can work hard in it, and that was the only way of like keeping it hard. Because if you heated it up and quenched it like you were doing with iron, you're actually annealing the copper, so it's very malleable and soft, like plasticine basically. But I add in tin, that gave it a strength, and then the Bronze Age kicked off, and then they could start making axes with bronze. And then when the Iron Age period came, they've discovered this new metal, superseded basically the bronze, but the bronze had its uses. And that's where another element of what I do is, because I'm very much like entwined with the Bronze Age and Iron Age. The Iron Age was like this new material which would stay sharper longer, and they could forge it. That you can forge bronze. Forging is actually when you like you're using a hammer and you're actually forging the material
on the anvil.
Yeah, so like when you're talking about molds, that would be another thing. That's when they started to cast bronze, and they found that brass was this amazing material that they could put in a crucible into a furnace to get it into a liquid content, and then they could pour it into molds that they've made. So that was a different element there. But what I've actually focused on, copper on its own or bronze, there's a type of work where you hammer the work. It's like embossing from both sides, and the term is called repoussé. So with the copper, you can work on one side, then the other, and start bashing out shapes. You could bash out a face, and you're just basically working with really primitive tools on a little oak stump with hammers and simple little tools that I forged in that little clay fire forge that we talked about earlier on. And then the copper starts to work harden. If you carry on working it, it's split and cracks. So we can put it in the forge again and get it to a cherry red, then quench it in the water, and then it's malleable and ductile over again. Then we can push it out even more and more and more. So they were doing that in bronze and copper, and making cauldrons that archaeologists are finding these days, that were in burial sites and such like. These beautiful treasures. So not only have they gone and mined the material, then smelted it, then they've hammered it out into a sheet, and then they've carried out this repoussé work into amazing treasures. So that's another element of what I do. It comes in with the blacksmithing side of it. Just looking at any Celtic books on treasures that have been found, you'll see repoussé over and over again, as well as the forge work. So they were really advanced in doing amazing things in simple, primitive workshops. With the clay fire on the ground, like we've got here with leather bellows, they were... had furnaces running, they're smelting iron, and then they're forging it into tools. I did some really advanced heritage training with a chap called Paul Allen. He was showing us how to make all our own tools with the hammer on the anvil. If you see things like gates in cathedrals and churches and such like, these beautiful gates are all hand forged with a hammer on an anvil. And instead of using any electronic welding equipment or fabrication, drills, angle grinders, anything like that, we've been trained to use the hammer and the anvil and the fire to forge tenon joints like you would see in woodwork, to fire weld, and that fire weld or forge welding is to join two bits of metal together to become one, using no electrical tools at all, just using the skill of fire management and then the anvil and the hammer, and then riveting. So that's the ancient way of working with the metal that was trained, and repoussé was an element of that. So then you think, like, where could you see repoussé work which you could earn money? Because in the olden days, it was making sacred offerings, and that could have been a job for somebody to make something for royalty in the clan or a chieftain or something, some special shield that was part of their family. So today, if we was to look at those skills and where they could be used, if you see things like weather vanes on churches and cathedrals, and they're three-dimensional, they are made in two halves most of the time, and they're hand-beaten copper repoussé and then silver-soldered together or riveted together. And then the iron work, which is the compass points in north, south, east, west, is forged iron work with tenon joints and fire-welded graceful scrolls that are unravelling. So you've got that nature that the ancient people in the Bronze Age and Iron Age were creating in their work. You see that in gates, you're seeing plant life unravelling and uncoiling, and the Greeks were the first people to start. You would see on their pillars and such of their structures, a camphor sleeves and scrolls and nature uncoiling and unravelling. So going right back in tissue, they were carving that into stone, and then you started seeing that happening in forge work. And in Victorian times, in Edwardian times, that was especially into Edwardian times, it was in its peak of hand craftsmanship throughout all of the other crafts and raw industries. The blacksmith made his own tools, and he made all of the other tools for all of the other crafts. He made the hinges for the church gate, he made the miner's pick, and he made the needle for the tailor to sew, and the sword, the arrow, and everything else that you can think of. The woodcarver's chisel, the stonemason's chisel, the stonemason's tools. It went on and on and on. So the blacksmith was the heart of the village.
Do you find that there's still practical demand? I mean, most people think of it possibly blacksmithing as something which is still used for shoeing horses and for horsework. But is there any other kind of practical stuff which is you find that there's still a demand for?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a separation now with shoeing horses. Back in the day, when we were using horses on the road everywhere instead of cars and vehicles, the shoes would have been forged by the blacksmith and fitted. Nowadays, there's quite a separation, because you have to understand the veterinary side of the horse's hoof, and it's not just ordinary blacksmith could do. It's a specialised training for a farrier. I most certainly can forge a horseshoe, but fitting it's another thing. But with regard to the heritage side of work and the training that I've been through, all of that heritage that we have in this country, and that could be a castle or a cathedral or a stone circle or anything like that, where there's any ironwork that has been made in the past, we need to upkeep that maintained as part of our heritage for our country. And that could be the stonework on the cathedral, it could be the weather vane, it could be the gates, it could be any ironwork. So the heritage, and working with organisations like English Heritage and the National Trust that are protecting our heritage. And I've recreated this Iron Age forge setting to make people feel that they're in the right environment to feel at ease, you know, sitting on a sheepskin, leather clay forge, and primitive tools. Just a piece of copper or a piece of iron can be forged into beautiful things, practical and decorative. We're all talking about going green, but when you think of going back to the old ways, you know, I'm using charcoal, a clay forge, and we're basically in the middle of a field, and we're making treasures here, or tools. In a simple, gentle way.
What's your thoughts about how healthy this craft is as something that should be being retained as a community memory?
What is really valuable about most certainly my craft that I feel very passionate about is that if the steel industries, steel mills and things like that get less and less and less, and we can't buy ready-made material because the sources are running dry or it's costing too much to do that. As a blacksmith, if you bought me an old broken horseshoe on a cobbled lane, I could reforge it into something else. I can take car components like leaf springs and high carbon steel that's used in car parts when they go to scrap, it can be reforged into tools. So if there was that turning point where it flipped over, where we were struggling as a nation, the blacksmith can still make the tools, going back like we did. So if it came to that, instead of we don't have to go and necessarily mine those minerals that we talked about earlier, the blacksmith can take what we've got kicking around all over the place and reforge it into something else. Like, I've got a heavy horse myself, and after the horseshoes are done with on the horse, I can reforge those into new things. We call that recycling. I can change the hinge that's broken of the gate into something completely different, like fire welded chain links. So it's got two sides to it. Yeah, you could either go with the flow of what's happening and embrace it, or you can support how it could change for the better, it could be, or it could be maybe for the worst that we think today as a society, because I feel we live in a throwaway society. We go and buy an axe that's been made abroad that could have a plastic handle to it. So if that axe became blunt, we couldn't knock it off the shaft and harden and temper it, because it's been glued on, it's been moulded on. But the old axes, the rusty old axes that we see for sale for hardly any money, because we discarded them as they're no good, they've got no handle and they're rusty, they can be put into the forge, hardened and tempered, and go on a new shaft. You could go into the hedgerow and get a piece of ash and whittle it down to make a handle, and that axe will go on for your lifetime and other lifetimes. So as a blacksmith, in that way of thinking, it is open scope. The potential and the benefits from that craft are endless, and that they always will be. I'm not actually online or anything at the moment, because I live in a horse-drawn Botox gypsy wagon, and I've been living like that for some years now. So now I'm a little bit living back in the past, not so much the Bronze Age in that way, but I mean, I am using my heavy horse to work on the land. So COSIRA and the Rural Development Commission, it used to be based in Salisbury. There was lots of books published to support the heritage of the craft that you can still get today. One of them's called Blacksmith Craft, which is an amazing little book to just an insight of the ancient ways of forging. But an organisation, Worshipful Company of Blacksmiths, I'm a member of, and they've been active for quite some time. I think of like 1326 for royalty, so protecting the blacksmith. So and their motto is, by hammer and hand, all arts do stand.